Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 188 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, and leave a review once you're on that page. Find us on audioboom.com as well. Log on to normantranscript.com. You can check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. See all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Wednesday episode today. Thunder Rockets game 2, Wednesday night. That's at 7 p.m. Central. Not going to go for too long today, even though it's a playoff game day. I've just been, like, super under the weather. It's these Houston allergies, man. They're killing me. I'm like, and talking has not been my friend, which is great for the people who are around me and don't need to hear me talking 24 hours a day, but certainly not the best for me when I have to sit here and talk to myself for X amount of minutes. Anyway, before we start, I do want to correct one thing I said in the podcast yesterday, because I said something that I said an opinion that was based on something I thought was true at the time, but wasn't true. I had Ben DuBose on the podcast from Locked On Rockets, and we talked a little bit about Billy Donovan mentioning that the fives weren't supposed to switch on pick and rolls. That was something that he wanted to make part of the scheme during game one. Ben and I basically said that wasn't the case. They were switching on everything. They switched a lot. It was before I went back and rewatched the game. And I basically have a column up saying, well, you know what? The Thunder didn't really switch on everything. Their ones through fours switched on everything. And their fives sometimes switched. But it seemed like schematically they actually did have a plan to have them not switch. So what they were doing with their fives was they were dropping Adams back, and they were supposed to be dropping Kanter back. And much of the time on ball screens, those guys weren't actually switching. The times when they did switch, it was when someone who had already switched onto a ball handler was guarding in the front side of the pick and roll. So let's say like Jeremy Grant or Taj Gibson was already guarding a ball handler, guarding Patrick Beverley, guarding James Harden, and then Harden would run another pick and roll. So it was Adams guarding the screener and Taj Gibson guarding James Harden. Then they would switch in those scenarios. But if it was Andre Robertson at the top, it was a guard at the top, it was Victor Oladipo at the top, they weren't actually switching those for the most part. A couple of emergency switches, which were clearly because of the moment, because of the situation, the circumstance, whatever. But for the most part, they weren't switching that. I kind of think, after rewatching game one, I kind of think the switching is going to work. I think it's going to work against Houston. I think it's smart. I totally see what Billy Donovan is saying. They limited threes. They limited Houston to 33 threes, and that sounds like a lot of threes, because it is, but relatively, comparatively, compared to what Houston averages on the season, 40.3 threes a game, most of any team ever, 33 isn't that much. It's pretty good. And all you can do as a defense is limit attempts. You can't limit makes. I think if it's executed well, and I think it'll be executed better in the second game, it's hard to implement a defensive strategy you haven't used for 82 consecutive games, and then all of a sudden have to do it for not just a playoff game, but for a playoff game against one of the best offenses of all time. That's really tough. It's really hard. And they did a bad job with it. There's no question. But I think it was more on the execution than it was on the scheme. And I think Billy Donovan is going to do similar stuff. Now, I think there are going to be maybe a couple of adjustments. I think after there are switches and you have bigs on smalls, and those smalls try to penetrate, I think they might end up helping off weak side shooters and that kind of stuff a little bit more. I think they might pull off some shooters in the corner during pick and rolls when Capella is rolling and that kind of stuff a little bit more, just in an attempt to try to take away those lobs, because those lobs hurt them, the ones to Capella, that kind of stuff. Let's go some Twitter questions. First one from Drinking Tea. Would a lineup of Russ, Oladipo, Robertson, Grant, and Gibson at the five work well? You can switch with this, and Taj can guard on the perimeter if switched. I'm with it. I've been calling for that lineup for a little bit. I think that lineup makes a lot of sense in this series. You can play that against their starters. You can put Jeremy Grant in the corner on Ryan Anderson. You can switch everything with Jeremy Grant. You can switch everything with Taj Gibson, who can go on the perimeter. Taj Gibson has had success in playoff series before, switching onto guards and helping the Bulls defense a lot because of his ability to switch onto guys in the perimeter, guards, wings, whatever it is. obviously your preference is not Taj Gibson guarding a guard. But in an emergency scenario, in a switch, that kind of stuff, that's cool. You can get away with that. And he's your best big for that if you're the Thunder. He's your best potential five-man for that. There's no question about that because Adams is pretty good on the switches. He's okay. Did a really good job in the Western Conference Finals last year. That's the best he's done. But that was a year ago. I mean, that was different team, different opponent. It was a year. I mean, it's, you know, you can relate it because it's the playoffs. But Taj Gibson is better than Adams at that. It's tough to do. And the reason I say it's tough to do is because you're basically throwing aside your two centers in order to play that lineup. And that's what makes it tough. Because you're not playing Cantor and you're not playing Adams then. And monetarily, that's obviously tough because Adams has a $100 million extension, which kicks in next season. Cantor makes a $17 million a year. And people like to refer to, well, you know, that's X amount of dollars sitting there on the bench. And that's obviously tough. And that's one way to look at it. But it's also a sunk cost. And I'm not even arguing that that contract for Adams isn't deserved. It is. I think that's a good contract. I think he's going to perform to that contract over the life of it. But for this series, for this matchup, I think that lineup makes a lot of sense because Russ gets you the offense. And it's not like there's no other offense there. Like Oladipo gives some shooting. Grant can make an open corner three. Gibson, you know, is a really good screen setter and he's a roller and he can hit some from mid range and he's got some post game and their thing, you know, it's not like you give him the ball, he's not good. He's a pretty solid offensive player. He doesn't shoot threes. He's not gonna take you off the dribble. But he's got an offensive skill set. I mean, there are offensive players on that roster, or on that lineup, I should say. And defensively, it just makes the most sense. Now, I'm not saying that you start that. And I'm not even saying you definitely finish with it, because that depends on how Houston finishes, and it depends on the ebbs and flows of the game and all that stuff. I can't say what lineup you absolutely have to close with, because I don't know what Houston's going to be closing with, and that's an in-the-moment decision. But I was surprised that Billy Donovan didn't try that lineup during Game 1. And I think he will try it during Game 2 because he tries a lot of different lineups. He tries a lot of different things. Heck, he tried Norris Cole, which was still weird. I still don't quite understand why that happened, even after asking him about it. And him saying that he just liked him in that matchup against the guys that Houston was playing. He thought it was a good matchup for Norris Cole. But I don't understand why that happened after Norris Cole basically not playing in a role all year. And then all of a sudden he's playing 3 point guards in the playoffs. That I didn't quite get. He got 6 minutes out of Cole. But if Norris Cole's going to play, that means they're going to be... If he's going to play in a Game 1, I don't know if that means he's going to play in a Game 2. But if he's going to play in a Game 1, that means we're going to see funky lineup combinations from Billy Donovan. That's going to happen because that's what Billy Donovan does. It's how he operates. He operates in a funky lineup world. And I don't think this lineup's so funky. I think it's something that could work. And if Cantor progressively loses playing time, makes it a lot easier to run a lineup like this. You can just play... Basically, play Grant exclusively at the four for the most part. And you can basically play a three-man big rotation of Gibson, Adams, and Westbrook. Not Westbrook, obviously. I was surprised by Gibson's minute total during the first game. Played 20, 21 minutes. I think he's going to be valuable defensively in this series. I think he's going to play more than that. I think it's extremely possible that's the fewest amount of minutes that Taj Gibson plays in a game this series. I think he's going to be up there. Get into the high 20s, get into the 30s. I think that's what's going to happen with Gibson because I think he's tremendously important for this team on the defensive side against a team like Houston that likes to spread and shoot threes, and especially if they're going to be switching and stuff. Next one from That True Talk. Do the Thunder have any chance winning this series with Westbrook not playing like the best player in the series? I'm glad this question got asked because no, they don't. They're just not as good of a team as Houston is. And if Westbrook's not the best player in the series, then Harden is the best player in the series. And it's not like the rest of the roster is able to make up that difference. Something that I think is interesting, though, the reason I like this question is because something I think is interesting. Since Game 1, and I wrote on this today. Since Game 1, there's been a lot of... So here's what the talk has been. It's been, is Enes Kanter playable? What's up with the Thunder defense? It's been Victor Oladipo shot 1 of 12. It's been Steven Adams had only 6 points and... Had some bad plays on offense and didn't play particularly well. It's been that Alex Abrines was scoreless off the bench. There have been a lot of different things that people have talked about as for reasons why the Thunder lost. And you know what? All of those things were contributive factors. They all contributed. But you know the number one reason why they lost so bad? Because Russell Westbrook shot 6 of 23 and had 9 turnovers. You know, it's a point I've made a few times. The Thunder were 33-9 when Russell Westbrook had a triple-double this year. That's a lot of people use that as a stat to show how important Westbrook is to the Thunder. Because when he plays well, look, they're finally good. And when he doesn't play well, look how badly they need him. They lose it. Whenever he doesn't play well, they lose. They're a three-something team. Their winning percentage is in the 300s when he doesn't have a triple-double. And they're 33-9 when he does. But to me, that almost shows more. That stat is more of an indicator of how many duties Westbrook has as opposed to how many things he has to do. And I think that's kind of an important distinction. And the reason why I say that is because it's not like when he isn't playing well. It's not like when he has an off night, he says, all right, I'm going to hand this one off to Oladipo. All right, Adams, you take some of these responsibilities. He doesn't do that. He doesn't relinquish any of them. He still plays the exact same way. And that's just who he is. That's his DNA. It's who he is. It's part of what makes him great. It's part of what leads to his off nights. It's just sometimes there are some people whose strengths can also come from the same spot as their weaknesses. That's true for a lot of people. But with Westbrook, when he's having a 6-for-23 night, when he's got 9 turnovers, he's not giving the ball away more. I mean, he's giving it away more, but he's not giving it up more. He's not letting teammates take over more. He's not giving up any of those responsibilities. And he literally broke the usage rate record. He is handling the ball as much as any player ever. He has as many offensive duties as any player ever has on the basketball court. And when you have a guy who is taking 40-some-odd percent of your shots, who's creating the majority of your offense, and he's playing poorly, he's passing poorly, he's rebounding poorly, he's shooting poorly, you're going to play poorly. Because that's 60-70% of your offense coming from one source. And that one source isn't good, it's just not going to be good. So I think that's why you have the disparity. That's why they're so bad when he doesn't play well, when he doesn't get triple-doubles. And he didn't play well in that game. So if he plays great, they have a good chance to win. But when he plays really badly, like that's the easiest fix. And I think he will play well in game two because he very rarely has really bad back-to-back games. It's very rare that he does that. He did that like once this year when he had two really, really, really poor shooting performances in a row. So I think he'll play well in game two. But that's the easiest fix. That's an easier fix than shoring up the defense or hoping Oladipo shoots better or hoping Adams contributes more or seeing what's going on with Cantor's minutes. The easiest fix is Russell Westbrook goes from playing a really, really bad game one to playing like he normally did during the regular season on most nights. And all of a sudden, that's a different team. It's not going to make a 31-point difference, but it's going to make the game a whole lot closer than it was. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. You can head out to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com or find me on Twitter @FredKatz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road. That's my blog there. You can follow team coverage and see what's next for the Thunder. And that's going to do it for today. I'm back tomorrow. I'm going to be podcasting after the game on Wednesday night, coming back to the hotel room, podcasting here. I'll put that up for Thursday morning, as I always do. But until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.